Loss of agency shows up all the time. It also means going to a doctor and unthinkingly and without investigation, accepting their point of view on your condition. I didn't say don't listen to it. For God's sakes, listen to it, but don't give up your agency.
This is It's Okay That You're Not Okay, the show that explores how not okay we are and why that is okay to talk about. I'm your host, Megan Devine. This week on It's Okay That You're Not Okay, renowned speaker and best-selling author Dr. Gabor Mate joins me to talk about the long-term costs of denying grief or any emotion and why elephants might just be better than humans. Settle in, everybody. This fascinating conversation with one of the world's leading experts on trauma and addiction and stress coming right up after this first break.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Before we get started, two quick notes. One, this episode is an encore performance. I am on break working on a giant new project, so we're releasing a mix of our favorite episodes from the first 3 seasons of the show. Some of these conversations you might have missed in their original seasons, and some shows just truly deserve multiple listens so that you capture all of the goodness. Second note, while we cover a lot of emotional relational territory in our time here together, this show is not a substitute for skilled support with a licensed mental health provider or for professional supervision related to your work. Take what you learn here, take your thoughts and your reflections out into your world, and talk about it. Hey friends, I'm so excited to share this episode with you. It's such a great opening to season 3 and all of the amazing conversations that are to come. Here's why it's our starting point. In his latest book, The Myth of Normal, Dr. Gabor Mate says that being shamed or pressured into pretending things don't hurt comes with a long-term cost, both personally and collectively. He says, quote, "So much heartbreak, addiction, disease, violence, and suffering spools out from the endless daily act of denying that what hurts doesn't hurt." So you can see why I love his work. This is the same stuff that I've been writing about and speaking about for over a decade. And it turns out that pretending things are okay when they are not is doing far more harm than good. Dr. Gabor Mate is a renowned speaker, expert in trauma, stress, addiction, and child development, and he's the New York Times bestselling author of the new book, The Myth of Normal, plus the award-winning In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts and like a million other books, all of which will be linked in the show notes. And we cover a lot of territory in this episode, and even though I had a meticulously crafted outline for us to follow, well, for me to follow, we didn't follow any of it. Instead, we talked about inherited grief, what happens when we deny our emotions, and how those emotions find other ways to speak in our personal lives, in our communities. We talked about the differences between humans and other species, with a special shout out to elephants. And in a fascinating conversation about the fetishization of resilience, that's a hard thing to say, the fetishization of resilience, we learn how politics and politicians are influenced by grief. It's this like macro, micro, inner world, outer world conversation that threads a lot of powerful things together. Now, there are two things that you'll hear us mention that might need a little bit of a backstory. So one, you'll hear Gabor reference the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's basically the catalog of mental health conditions or disorders used by the mental health industry to define and diagnose mental health conditions. If you want to hear more about the DSM and my thoughts about it, check out the episode on prolonged grief disorder in the podcast archives, and we'll link it in the show notes too. The second thing you'll hear Gabor mention is his upcoming interview with Prince Harry. That's right. Right after Gabor and I finished our conversation, he was heading directly into a call with Prince Harry to discuss his mother's death and all the ways that his grief has evolved and changed over time. So, you know, no big deal, just Gabor and Prince Harry chatting about grief. But first, we had our conversation. There are so many gems here, friends. I can't wait to hear what you carry with you from this conversation with Dr. Gabor Mate.
Thanks for having me. I'll tell you very frankly, we've had your book in our house for a while. My wife really loves it. Her mother died a few years ago. I know of your work, but I've been too busy to read the book itself. My wife really talks up your book very highly.
Oh, thank you. Thank her for me. I appreciate that. Yeah, I feel like, you know, reading through a lot of your work, getting ready for our conversation, we have a lot of overlaps in the ways that we come to the world and the ways that we think about not just grief, but inherited emotional styles and the impact that that's had on the world.
Sure.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about your book, but your most recent book, but not yet, because where I'd actually really like to start is a little bit earlier.
Sure,
in your timeline, if that's okay with you. I want to follow a thread from Scattered Minds. So in Scattered Minds, you were writing about your family's experience of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And you wrote, "As a Jewish infant under Nazi occupation, I was raised by a mother who was grief-stricken at the death of her parents at Auschwitz. My mother was anxiety-ridden because she didn't know if her husband was dead or alive, and we were under threat of deportation and violence ourselves." Now, you've written about that family experience from a lot of different perspectives, attention deficit disorder, behavioral coping skills. And we were just talking about Prince Harry and the inheritance of grief well before his mom died. So what strikes me as a thread running through so much of your collected works is both lived and inherited grief.
Yes. And how it's processed or isn't.
Yeah.
There's a great neuroscientist who I quote in a couple of my books, no longer alive, talk about grief. He died of cancer a few years ago. His name was Jaak, J-A-A-K, Panksepp, P-A-N-K-S-E-P-P. And he described the human emotional system as being very similar to the emotional system of other mammals with whom we share certain brain circuits for play, for example, or for caring, or for anger, and also for grief. Grief isn't some kind of a arbitrary response. It's actually wired into our brains. There's a reason for it. And the reason is loss is a part of life. So that even before the big losses of somebody dying, a neighbor, a child might not want to play with you when you're 4 years old. Your dog may die. Grandpa may not be available on a Sunday to be with you.
Mm.
And you have to be able to process that loss. It's many of the dysfunctions that I've experienced or witnessed in my patients is really our inability or our lack of support to process grief and to come to terms with the loss.
Yeah, it's that lack of support and lack of acknowledgement.
That's right. So that's why grief is such a sometimes spoken, sometimes unspoken theme through my work, because I deal with physical illness or what we call mental illness or addictions or all kinds of coping mechanisms, dysfunctions. There's always an unprocessed grief underneath it. If I could come to terms with the loss, I wouldn't have to keep running away from the grief that I don't want to feel.
Mm. I think that some people can interpret what you're talking about there as like acceptance, right? If I can just accept what happened to me, then it wouldn't bother me. But that's not what you're saying.
No, acceptance can be rather superficial. I can say I accept something, and intellectually I might, but that doesn't mean I've emotionally worked it through. That doesn't mean that I really grieved it. There's a friend of mine, a psychologist, very astute man, with whom I wrote a book really based on his work. It's called Hold On To Your Kids, and it's a parenting book. Gordon Neufeld is his name. And Gordon said to me once, we shall be saved in an ocean of tears.
Mm.
This is when we actually work through the loss and we grieve it and cry about it, not because we accept it intellectually, but actually feel the pain of it and allow ourselves to feel the pain of it and really cry about it. That's when the healing actually happens.
Yeah, really being seen in it. And that's one of my favorite themes in all of your work, is that it's not about we do these things so that nothing bugs us anymore, or, you know, this really transactional emotional formula.
Not that nothing bugs us anymore, that we can handle it when it bugs us.
We
can handle it functionally rather than escaping, denying, or acting it out.
Mm. There's something that you wrote where you said, we have the circuitry for grief inside our brains. It needs to be allowed to do its thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what Jack Panksepp was talking about.
Mm.
So we have these circuits in our brain. One of the essential developmental needs of children, as I point out in my book, The Myth of Normal, is the capacity to experience all their emotions. Not the capacity, they have the capacity, the freedom to experience all their emotions and have those emotions validated and heard, listened, accepted by the environment, which is to say the nurturing environment, the parents and the other adults in their lives. And that includes grief. We're endowed with these emotional circuitry for love, for example, but that doesn't mean we're going to feel love all the time or even be able to feel it at all in the case of some people, because like all instincts, we're all evolutionary determined emotional dynamics. They need the right environment for their full unfoldment and development. So just because our brains are wired for it, it doesn't mean we'll experience it in a healthy way. That depends on the kind of receiving and holding that we experience in our formative years. So it being there as a potential, as a brain circuit, you know, to give you maybe a trivial example, a bird instinctually is programmed to fly, but unless they're given the latitude to do so, they won't.
Mm.
You know, if you kept the baby bird in a cage and they never see adult birds flying, that bird won't fly.
Right.
That instinct needs the environment to evoke it, and the same with grief, actually.
Yeah, we need to see examples to live into.
We need to see the examples, but even deeper than that, we have to be able to experience it and have that experience validated and accepted.
Yeah. It's tricky, right? Because we've got such a grief illiterate and emotionally illiterate culture going back hundreds of years. So where do we start to find that validation that we need for ourselves and offer that validation to our kids, to our friends, to our community? Like if we don't have that pattern to emulate, like where do we start with that?
Well, like with so many other things that we've become alienated from, we have to understand and appreciate and come to terms with what we've lost. Now, you talk about grieving. there's greeting traditions all over the world. I mean, there's the Irish keening, you know, there's the Mexican Day of the Dead, where they actually have picnics by the gravesite of the dead ones. There's the Jewish Shiva, where people gather and tell jokes and drink coffee, you know, well, and also talk respectfully and appreciatively about the deceased. So we haven't entirely lost touch with these traditions, but they become more and more the exception because we've been so future oriented, become so future oriented. It's all about what we can get from the future.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of those traditions have been sort of consumed by the transactional get over it thing. Like once you've finished Shiva, you shouldn't be sad anymore. If you understand that death is part of life, then you shouldn't still be sad that your child died 6 months later. You know, like there's, if we get the rituals of end of life correct, then grief shouldn't be something that you still experience. And I just feel like we've done such a disservice to some beautiful traditions by making them an endpoint instead of a beginning.
Well, the traditions aren't meant to obviate or put an end to grief. They're meant to ritualize it and validate it and to provide some support for the grieving ones. But that doesn't mean it's over. I don't know any parent who's ever lost a child who's never going to be sad about it. How is that even possible? Mm-hmm. I mean, not to trivialize it, but I used to have this beautiful Malamute dog who died. God really blew that one when they made the life of dogs so much shorter than life of human beings, you know? Mm-hmm. So I still grieve over that beautiful Malamute. You know, and that was decades ago. Not that I'm going and feeling sad about it all the time, but when I look at his photograph or think about him, there's a poignant grief, like pang in my heart, you know? So that doesn't mean I go around depressed around about it, but it's there. Why shouldn't it be there?
Right. Why shouldn't it be there? And I think that is the part that we're missing so much, is that the normalcy of a poignant connection that you carry with you. Right? I mean, the normalcy of lifelong connection to those we love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that orientation to the human condition is normal, that there is nothing wrong with our ways of feeling in this world.
Well, you've probably seen the latest emendations to the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. Now they got some pathology related to grief.
Mm-hmm. Boy, have I had thoughts about that.
You know, somebody once wrote a parody of the DSM, and they said that in the final analysis, every human activity except the practice of psychiatry is pathological.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, we've already moved in that direction. And I can look at the history of the DSM and take a little bit of hope in that, like, homosexuality is no longer considered a pathological condition. Like, yay us. But sticking prolonged grief disorder in there, you know, there's just so much like, oh, we need it so that we can get care covered under this corrupt system. Like, that actually doesn't work either. Yeah. But this really, like, this demonizing and pathologizing of the human experience, which is something,
if people only understood that in this insurance driven non-health system, the DSM can be used to get coverage for treatment, but it has no other value, and it's a totally arbitrary value. And well, it has a certain value. It describes things.
Yeah, it's shorthand.
But it doesn't explain anything, you know. So you referred to my book on ADHD, which is a condition I've been diagnosed with. But look how circular, tautological it is. Gabor has difficulty paying attention and has got poor impulse control and doesn't like sitting still. Why is that? That's because he's got ADHD. How do we know he's got ADHD? Because he's got difficulty sitting still and difficulty paying attention and has poor impulse control. Why does he have poor impulse control? Because, you know, you can go through the whole list of psychiatric diagnoses and play the same circular game. So they describe things, and that may be helpful sometimes. They explain nothing. They say nothing about the human experience. So in calling grief a disorder, Well, you've described somebody who's got long grief and maybe is more entrenched in their grief than is good for them. But to call that a disorder is to ignore the fact that maybe that person is alone and they haven't had the support. Maybe they've had this cheer up, get over it kind of mentality thrust upon them. In other words, it's not a disorder in the person, it's a relationship to the culture that they live in. So why are we diagnosing the individual with this disorder?
I love that. Looking at the diagnosis specifically for prolonged grief disorder, not as a diagnosis of the individual, but as a diagnosis of the relationship to the community.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's amazing language for that, because it really is a community issue, right? We know that being seen and acknowledged and supported, tangibly supported, emotionally supported, seen, witnessed inside difficult experiences is one of the things that helps somebody continue to live their life in a way that has beauty and meaning and support and all of the good outcomes that we want for somebody. And we know that lack of support, being shamed or otherized or not supported and not validated, has those quote unquote negative outcomes of, you know, perseveration or whatever.
Unless I'm very much mistaken, elephants grieve in community.
Mm-hmm.
They share the grief circuit that we have.
Yeah.
No elephant, I imagine, tells another one, get over it already.
Right. Buck up, pachyderm, we got things to do. Like, that's just not a thing that happens. Elephants are just the coolest and most fascinating creatures. And I feel like we can look to them for so many mirrors for the human experience. I remember reading, gosh, over a decade ago about elephants who had witnessed their mothers or their aunties or female relations being killed at the hands of poachers.
Yeah.
Then became these like roving gangs of violent young males. And that back at the time, I believe this was in Kenya, not entirely sure, but that there was an organization basically doing trauma work with young male elephants to like, that was phenomenal.
There's a professor emerita at Notre Dame University in psychology. Her name is Darcia Narvaez. And she's done a lot of work on indigenous peoples and tribal cultures and all that we've lost and so on. But she's written a book called The Evolved Nest, and it's coming out in a couple of months. And this chapter is on elephants and other mammals and how they relate emotionally to each other, and including her own grief. That book is so exciting. When a baby elephant is born, you know what happens?
What?
This is at the other end of the spectrum from grief. The parturient elephant, when she goes into labor, she's surrounded by the other female elephants. When the baby plops to the ground, they all stroke them with their trunks.
Mm.
That not only do they grieve communally, they also celebrate life communally. This is elephants.
Mm. Elephants are rad. There's so much in there about not fixing, right? Like letting things be as they are. And we can look at ourselves and we can look at elephants and we can look at other mammals, other creatures, and say, here's what happens when validation doesn't happen, when community doesn't happen, when there are breaches in relationship. Like, this is where we get violence. This is where we get addiction. This is where we get all of these things that are social and communal illnesses, right? It's not the grief, it's not the pain, it's not the birth that's the problem. It's the rift in the relationship and the community.
Well, the example I often give is, let's say a three-year-old is enjoying an ice cream cone and then the ice cream falls into the dust. And the kid is really upset. Now, there's three ways you could handle it. You could say, oh, it's okay, I'll get you another one. The other is, stop whining. So what? Think of all the starving children in Asia. The third one is, you're really sad that your ice cream dropped to the ground. You really was enjoying it so much and now it's gone. Oh, what a drag. Come here, let me hold you, you know? Now, two of those methods are going to create problems. The third one will help the child handle grief.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of, do we have the strength to accept the emotions of another that we can be with it without trying to either bribe it or forbid it?
I love the bribing it one. Right. I mean, this is such like behavioral skill building here is life has celebrations and it has difficulties and everything in between. And do we have the skills and the networks to continue to meet it? And the bribery one, it's interesting. Like, I get that as soon as you say that. And, you know, I'm like, oh, crap, I've probably done that before where I've like, oh, let's just get you another one. Or it's OK, we can do another, like we can try it again. Like there's this. There can, well,
that can come in afterwards, but first you have to accept the feeling. And yeah. I remember reading an article of yours, I think in the Washington Post, about your experience of the loss of your partner. And well-meaning friends were saying to you, oh, you're young and pretty, yeah, you'll find another partner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what were they saying? What they were actually saying is, I find it hard to be with your grief, and I want to talk you out of it so I don't have to feel uncomfortable.
Exactly.
That's what they were.
Absolutely.
That's what they're actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
You found it, of course, naturally profoundly unhelpful. And you seem to have had either the resilience or the support or both not to be negatively impacted by those kind of well-meant but really stupid interventions.
Mm.
And the same thing happens in the addiction world. You know, the codependent who's desperately trying to change the addict, what they're really saying is, I can't handle what I feel when I see you behaving in a certain way. So I'm going to try and change you so I don't have to feel so bad inside myself. So we're so often using others to try and regulate ourselves. We try and control their experience so that we don't have to feel bad ourselves. And it shows up in child rearing all the time. And certainly it shows up around grief, of course.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's that second half of the sentence, right? It's what we really mean by what we're saying. And
yeah.
It's just, it's so rude on so many levels. And it really is about like we're trying to regulate our own discomfort. And I think the trick here, and trick is maybe the wrong word, but the trick here is to slow things down and recognize your own discomfort in the face of somebody else's emotions or feelings.
Yeah, to this day in my marriage, I have great difficulty with my wife's anxiety.
Mm.
No, not that she's sort of an anxiety-ridden person all the time, but when the anxiety shows up, I want to kind of regulate it and control it. No, why is that? Because as you quoted earlier, when I was an infant, I had a very anxious mother. And that made me feel intensely uncomfortable.
Mm.
So it still brings up that. Just yesterday, my wife Ray and I had a conversation, you know, around this whole interview thing with Prince Harry that I'm doing this weekend. And there's been a lot of backwash and feedback and public conversation around it. And I'm kind of used to the limelight, you know, so I can take it in my stride. My wife, for her, this has been rather overwhelming.
Mm.
And part of her reaction is, this is too much. And it's kind of an anxiety reaction. And I found myself tense and trying to control her. And why is that? Because I'm uncomfortable with her anxiety. I can't, what's the word you say? To stay with it or to have patience for it?
Mm.
To be able to be with it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a word that you used.
Oh, I'm not sure, but one of the words I will often use is withstand or witness.
Yeah, well, this is it. I had difficulty doing that until mm-hmm. I realized that I was having difficulty doing it. And then I owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, I'm noticing that I'm having difficulty. I'm the one having the difficulty here. But it's taken some work to gain that kind of self-awareness.
Yeah. And that's the work, right? Like the work is to recognize not that you or someone else is like screwing up or doing it wrong. It's that we all have conditioning and inheritances, emotional and physical and relational inheritances that have a long reach, and becoming aware of them so that we know when those things are happening so that we can sort of reset our foundations in the relationship that's happening or the interaction that's happening in front of us, right? And slowing things down to say, oh, this is actually causing discomfort in me. Let me tend to that so that I can either step away or I can show up for you in the ways that you deserve and the ways that you need. But I got to take care of this in me first.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, there's a lot of teaching. I don't know if you ever had Tara Brach on, but she talks very much about it in the same terms.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global.
When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, before we get back to my conversation with Dr. Gabor Maté, I want to tell you about a new way to get answers to your questions about grief. Each month, I host a live video call-in Q&A session for patrons. If you've ever wanted to know if what you're feeling is normal, come ask me. If you want to know how to have that conversation with your nosy relative who keeps butting into your business with their ideas about what your loss should look like, come join us. I'll help you create a boundary where there really needs to be a boundary. Once a month, every month, if you've ever wished you could talk to me directly and get your questions answered, this is by far the easiest way to do it. All of the information is at patreon.com/MeganDevine, and you can find the link in the show notes. I hope to see you there every month. All right, let's get back to my conversation with bestselling author Dr. Gabor Maté. I think I can get so adamant about the ways we do things wrong that it seems like I'm just like always like, okay, this is wrong and this is wrong and this is, you know, you have to do this better relationally and all of these things. And it is true that we get a lot of things wrong, and it doesn't have to be so complicated to make things better, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Tara talks about her method called RAIN, R-A-I-N. Which is recognize, just recognize that something is there, and then allow it to be there. And then, and I'm feeling sad right now, I'm feeling anxious right now, then investigate it, what's this all about, and then nurturing it, taking care of it, you know. And it's really what you're talking about as well, of just being with something and allowing it and being curious about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not... Something I love in what you just described is like the personal agency in there. And that's something that you talk about a lot in all of your work and in your most recent book too, is like the being able to find personal agency in your own healing and in your own life and in your own relationships.
Well, in my view, based on my medical experience and all the research that I've covered, is that loss of agency is at the source of much of what we call pathology. Whether physical or mental. And people have a hard time grasping this sometimes, only because the medical training completely separates the mind from the body. But that loss of agency actually shows up in physical illness. The mind-body unity being so such a fact, it's all one, that our emotional lives affect our physiology. When we lose agency, the capacity to respond authentically to our life situations from a place of self-awareness and connectedness to all our emotions, including pain and grief, when we lose that capacity, we lose agency. That loss of agency has an impact on our immune systems, on our hormonal apparatus, on our heart, our cardiovascular system, on our nervous system. And often healing, if you actually study the literature on healing, it has to do with the regaining of agency. Even the word healing comes from the word for wholeness. And so how's it that we're not whole? We're not whole because at some point, in order to survive our early environments, we had to suppress our connection to ourselves or agency, which at that time was necessary to help us negotiate our early environment. But that same loss of agency then, our giving up of ourselves, the loss of authenticity then, has physiological impacts lifelong that can manifest in illness of mind and body. And the healing then, becoming whole again, is precisely the regaining of that agency. Mm. That's a main theme in my most recent book.
Yeah. So what would regaining agency look like as a practice for an individual?
Here's what it would look like on a simple level. As I told you, I'm going to Los Angeles this week. It so happens, and you're in Los Angeles, and I arrive Wednesday evening, and I call you up, and I say, do you want to go for coffee? And you don't feel like it because you're tired, and because you watch television, or, you know, whatever.
I got things to do, yeah.
You got things to do. You're not feeling well, whatever. But you say yes, because you're afraid of displeasing me. You're afraid of hurting my feelings. You're afraid of disappointing me. You're afraid I won't like it. I won't like you if you say no. So you say yes, where there's a no that wants to be said. Well, that's a loss of agency. You're not acting on behalf of yourself. You're acting on behalf of what you think will please me so that I will accept you even as you're rejecting yourself. So loss of agency shows up all the time. It also means going to a doctor and unthinkingly and without investigation, accepting their point of view on your condition. I didn't say don't listen to it. For God's sakes, listen to it. But don't give up your agency. You know, in a relationship, when I talk about In the Myth of Normal, the chapter on women, 80% of autoimmune disease happens to women. Now, autoimmune disease happens to people who suppress their emotions, especially their healthy anger, who are always trying to please others and take care of the emotional needs of others. In other words, who are given up agency, or who think that agency is expressed through absorbing the needs and stresses of others. Now, in this culture, which gender is programmed to do that? It's not a genetic thing. It's a cultural thing. Mm. That's why women have 80% of autoimmune disease.
I love the phrase you use in the book, as women as the shock absorbers.
That's from a headline in the New York Times, yeah. Which during COVID looked at women and the stresses they're under, and women assumed automatically that their job was to absorb the stresses and griefs and unhappiness of their children, their families, and their spouses, which was caused by COVID. And women felt guilty when they couldn't successfully alleviate the stresses of their spouses. So the New York Times had an article called Society Shock Absorbers. I took that headline, made it into a chapter title, because that's actually at the root of so much chronic disease. That's why women have much more chronic illness than men do, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, there's the, when you're describing agency, you know, the way that I really hear this is like, we don't lie to ourselves very well. Right. So We're out of alignment with what we want for ourselves if we had the capacity or the time or the understanding that we need to listen for what's true for us and then claim that truth out into the world. And putting yourself first, the care and feeding of your own being ahead of the care and feeding of other beings. And we don't lie to ourselves very well, which is why, like, we go back sort of back to where we started here with validation and acknowledgement, not just of grief, but of everything. Like, that is the foundational element here.
Did you say that we don't lie to ourselves very well?
Yeah, we don't lie to ourselves very well.
I don't agree.
No?
I think we lie to ourselves all too well. which is why there's so much illness in this society. What we don't do it is we don't do it successfully because the body won't let us get away with it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I think that's sort of what, that's what I mean. Like, we lie to ourselves all the time. We're super duper practiced with it as a skill set. We're awesome at lying to ourselves, but the impact of lying to ourselves, like that, that bill comes due, right? Like, we don't lie to ourselves very well in the sense that that has such an impact and such a cost that it's not successful.
Absolutely. Well, how I would put it is we don't align with ourselves very well.
Mm.
And we lie to ourselves in order not to align with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that exacts an exorbitant cost in terms of health and well-being.
Yeah.
Or as Bessel van der Kolk says in the title of his book on trauma, the body keeps the score.
Yes. And the community keeps the score too, right? I mean, we're not just talking about individuals having issues, right? We're talking about communities and culture. And, you know, we started out this conversation talking about the long reach of inherited grief and inherited violence. And when I talk about politics or policy in my work, I don't get backlash as often as you might think in a sort of an ugly internet world, but mm-hmm. I do get some complaints like, can you just stick to grief? And, you know, my response is always like, I am sticking to grief.
Yeah, I know. I get the same thing. You're a doctor. Why do you talk about politics? I talk about politics because everything affects everything else.
That's right.
Because human health is not an individual or individualized quality. It's a reflection of our relationship from in utero onwards with our parents, with our environment, with our community, and with our whole culture. Nothing is separable. So if you look at so-called political factors, there was an article in the New York Times 10 days ago, as we speak, about Black women giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
And their risk of the child dying or them dying is higher than white women, regardless of economic status. It's about the inflammatory, literally physiologically inflammatory impacts of racism. Another study 3 months ago, in the aftermath of racism, if you look at the person, they have higher inflammatory processes in their bodies. But put that, project that on a lifelong basis. No wonder then, if you look at the health of populations such as Indigenous Canadians or Black Americans, on every measure they come out worse. And it's got nothing to do with genetics. It has to do with politics and society and sociology and culture and history. So how can we not talk about it when it's all one? That's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't separate that stuff because policies create grief. Systems create grief, and systems and policies are created by humans that are carrying deep trauma and a lack of alignment and a lack of being seen. And we can't talk about the need to acknowledge and honor grief and find community and find relationship and not talk about politics, policy, and culture, because they are all one cloth.
Yeah, well, you know, the Buddha said it 2,500 years ago. He said, look at a leaf or a raindrop. He said, look at all the conditions that go into making a leaf or a raindrop. It's all interconnected. He said, without the many, they cannot be the one. Without the many, they cannot be the one. And it's true. If you look at a leaf, you can look upon it as an isolated object. But is it? The leaf is a product of photosynthesis. It produces photosynthesis, which is to say the processing of light, which comes from the sun. And the leaf contains the sky, the water that fell from the sky, that then is sucked up through the roots and into the leaf. The leaf contains the earth, the materials. The leaf might reflect the activity of other animals and human beings. You can't talk about that individual leaf as an isolated, separate entity. It contains the whole world. The same thing is true of everything, including us as human beings. So that's why you can't separate anything from anything else. Mm. So it's not just spiritual wisdom that we're talking about here. We're talking just basic science.
Right. We're talking facts.
Yeah.
Facts, yeah. Not fluff here.
Yeah.
I mean, you keep your eyes and your mind on so much pain and suffering, right? And the systems and the containers and interrelatedness of pain and suffering, which can be a real bummer of a world, right? When we look at how much damage has been inherited and passed on and how much damage continues to be created. I know that you're not a downer of a person, right? Like, we can take things seriously and still find hope for things. I mean, I'm
well, let me make a few distinctions here.
Okay, lay it on me.
Yeah. So first of all, there's pain and there's suffering. They're not the same thing. You can have pain without suffering. When there's suffering, there's always pain. But when there's pain, there's not always suffering. It's a question of how I relate to that pain. And very often it's the denial of pain that creates the suffering. I had to be charming as a kid in order to be liked, and I'm charming all my life because I don't want to feel the pain of being rejected, and therefore I end up with the wrong people. That's going to create pain. So it's the running away from pain that creates the suffering very often, number one. Number two, you say, take it seriously, think seriously, and still have hope. Well, is there a contradiction somehow? It's not that despite taking things seriously, I have hope. It's because I take things seriously, I look at all aspects of things so that in every difficult situation, there's also a possibility. It's not that I have hope. It's I see the genuine possibility. And I've seen lots of people, as you have, I know, being through tremendous pain, tremendous suffering, and find new wisdom and even new ways of being alive through dealing or honestly by confronting seriously that pain and that suffering, so that the very possibility of healing and growth reside in the suffering. And as the Greek playwright Aeschylus wrote in one of his plays, the Agamemnon, that the way the gods created us, we have to suffer into truth. I wish it wasn't like that. But it's just all too true for a lot of us, that for you, I'm sure, and for me and for many other people listening, it's when they've suffered that they've actually started to discuss or discover or investigate, well, what is the source of my suffering and what can I learn from this? Hmm. So that it's not one or the other. It's that the suffering itself contains the possibility of healing. Hmm. And very often it's what grabs us by the scruff of our necks to truth, you know?
Yeah. There's so many directions that I could go, but I know that we are winding up with time and you need to get on to your next thing. So we will link in the show notes to all of the places where people can find you and hear more about you and to your newest book. Anything else you want folks to know in this last minute?
I think we've covered a lot. Thank you very much. And I really appreciate you hosting me. There's a film people might want to watch. It's online. It's called The Wisdom of Trauma, which is based on my work around trauma. You can donate. The filmmakers are raising money for their next project on Indigenous people around the world, but also people can't afford to. You're not obligated to donate. You can put $0 in there as well. That's up to the individual. But that film, The Wisdom of Trauma, which you can find online, I think it sums up my work really astutely. No thanks to me, by the way. That's the thing. That's the credit to the filmmakers, but I think it'll be of interest to a lot of your listeners.
Excellent. And we will find that and link to that in the show notes, everybody. So stay tuned. We will be right back with your questions to carry with you right after this break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Each week, I leave you with some questions to carry with you until we meet again. Now, Gabor had an event to get to immediately after our conversation, that conversation with Prince Harry that I mentioned before. So one, I didn't get to explore what hope means for him as much as I would have liked, though he did talk a little bit about hope there at the end. And two, if we'd had more time, you bet that we would have thoroughly gotten into the idea that healing comes through suffering, that our learning comes through suffering. I mean, if you just took that line of his out of context, it would be easy to hear it as like you needed your suffering. You needed your suffering in order to grow. And we know it's not like that. There's something to that, though, what Gabor was talking about at the close of our conversation. Not that we need suffering or that we only learn through suffering, but that there is knowledge, self-knowledge, knowledge we need for our own healing and the healing of the world inside that suffering. With coming into relationship with that suffering, finding ways to tell the truth about suffering so we can uncover the pain at the root of it and listen to what that pain has to say. I mean, that's just one of many things that I'm taking from this conversation with Dr. Gabor Maté, friends. From elephants to childhood to politics to everything. Now, at the end there, Gabor said something that I love. It was so fast that you might have missed it. He said, "It's because I take all this seriously that I have hope." Because I take this seriously, I have hope. Now, that's something I'm going to explore for myself this week. The ways that my own hope may or may not actually come from the serious attention I give to the pain of the world. That feels like interesting territory to me. How about you? What stuck with you from this conversation? Everyone's going to take something different from the show, but I do hope you found something to hold on to. If you want to tell me how today's show felt for you or you have thoughts on what we covered, let me know. Tag me at Refuge in Grief on all the social platforms or It's Okay Pod on TikTok so I can hear how this conversation affected you. You can follow the show at Refuge in Grief on all the social platforms and It's Okay Pod on TikTok to see video clips from the show. And use the hashtag It's Okay Pod wherever, not only so that I can find what you're thinking and you're feeling from this show, but so others can find that conversation too. None of us are entirely okay, and it's time we start talking about that together. Yeah? It's okay that you're not okay. You're in good company. That's it for this week, friends. Remember to subscribe to the show, leave a review for the show. Your reviews help make the show easier to find for other people, which obviously furthers our mission of getting more people to have interesting conversations about difficult things. Also, though, your reviews are really special to me personally, and I love to read them. Want more information or support on these topics? Look, grief is everywhere. As my dad says, daily life is full of everyday grief that we don't call grief. Learning how to talk about all that without cliches or platitudes or simplistic, dismissive statements, that's an important skill for everyone, whether you're trying to support a friend going through a hard time or you work in the helping professions and you talk about this stuff all the time. Get the help you need to have those conversations, find trainings, professional resources, and my best-selling book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay, at megandevine.co. It's Okay That You're Not Okay, the podcast, is written and produced by me, Megan Devine. Executive producer is Amy Brown, co-produced by Elizabeth Fazio, logistical and social media support from Micah, post-production and editing by Houston Tilley, music provided by Wavecrush, and today's background noise provided by the endless spring drone of chainsaws cleaning up after the winter rains.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.